Hello and welcome to this episode of the Containers Channel. My name is Matt McSpirit, technical evangelist for all of our data center technology. And on this episode, I'm joined by John Howard. John, welcome.
Hey Matt, thank you.
Tell us about who you are, what you do, what team you work on, why it's cool to be you at this point.
So, you can probably tell from the accent, I'm English, the same as you.
Excellent.
So I work on the Hyper-V team. I was a program manager on the Hyper-V team for about 9 years or so. Have been up until recently when I changed across to being a developer. So the big project I've been working on is the port of the Docker engine to Windows.
Nice. And we've been hearing a lot about Docker recently and a lot of momentum about containers on this channel, hence there is a channel. So tell us more about what this team does, that your new team specifically.
So there's a lot of moving parts in terms of Microsoft and the groups that are involved in containers as a whole. So it involves the kernel team, it involves the Hyper-V team, a lot of the server organization as well are involved in it. And in the specific bit that I'm working on, we're working on the management story for containers. That's where I'm specifically working on Docker, and there's a few people working on Docker, and there's other people working on other management stories for inbox management for containers as well.
Okay, so what's your specific function within your team? What is a day in the life of John like?
A day in the life of John is submitting change requests or pull requests, as they're known, to the open source community to improve the Docker engine on Windows, or the daemon on Windows.
Interesting, because we've had a few videos on the Containers channel already that are focused on deploying a new environment to run containers. We've talked about managing through PowerShell. There's a couple of videos with Docker. People might not know that much about Docker. Tell us a bit about Docker in general and how you became involved and how we became involved with them.
Sure. So just to clarify, there is a difference between a container and Docker itself. I want to be really clear on that. So Docker you can think of as a management story for containers. Containers are really an operating system construct in itself. They're the means in which this lightweight container, this execution environment, if you will, for a process or set of processes is a container itself.
Right.
That's an operating system construct. So Docker is a management entity or a management entity for those containers.
Okay, but it's also it's a company as well, is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Docker is a Docker Inc. is a company based down in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. They have several components of Docker itself, one of which is the Docker engine. That's the only one I've been working on. They have things such as Swarm and many other things as well. So the Docker engine itself is, at least on the Linux side of things, because I ported the Linux code effectively to run on Windows, it runs as a daemon on Linux that's serving requests from a client that says to the daemon, create me a container, start a container, this is how I want a container configured, shut down a container, export, import, and all those types of things you can do with containers.
And that client could be running on a Windows PC, a Linux PC, a Mac, or
yes, so before I got involved in Docker, to be clear, Docker actually has two parts, the Docker engine. So the Docker binary is both a client and a daemon process. So you can start it in a daemon mode, where it sits as a service, it's listening to requests from a client. And then Docker, the same binary, is also a client that can be used to talk through HTTP onto the daemons itself.
Right. Okay. And those typically exist in different locations.
They can do, or they can either be remote or they can be local to each other.
Nice. Okay.
So you could have a Windows client talking to a Linux daemon. You can have a Windows client talking to a Windows daemon, and similarly, you now have a Linux client talking to a Windows daemon as well.
Okay. So there's more flexibility. As you mentioned, you've ported it to Windows. Tell us a bit more about what that process involved. So you essentially just looking at it and thinking, how do I make that command work over here on Windows?
Yes and no. So there's a little bit of history to this. So I've actually ported it 3 times now.
Right. Third time's a charm.
Well, let me explain why that is the case. So I started this back in January this year, 2015. Mm-hmm. The first exercise was literally just looking at the code, trying to familiarize myself with it, and even just getting it to compile on Windows. To get to that state, what effectively I was doing wasn't really doing porting work as such, was just ripping out huge chunks of code that were very Linux specific, making them a no-op, so you just get something very small that compiles, and just getting that to respond to a very simple command, such as docker info. It doesn't make it any container calls or anything like that, because containers at that time didn't even exist on Windows.
So it's not usable by anybody in that state.
Absolutely
just,
not usable.
Kind of started the process.
So that was the first step. So once we've done the proof of concept to prove that at least we can get it to compile on Windows and respond to something in the actual Docker way that it does. The next one we did was a target that we demonstrated at the Build conference in April. Mm-hmm. So that was based on Docker, I think it was codebase 1.4 in the Docker master codebase. They move pretty fast, they're on 1.9 at the moment, and development for 1.9. So that actually was really driving containers, real containers in Windows. But one of the challenges in getting to that stage was the actual containers in Windows weren't available until very late in that cycle. So between February and almost very early in April, I was porting Docker, but without any containers at the back end.
So you didn't necessarily know that it was actually going to work at that point.
We had every confidence it would work, but there was still all that plumbing to make happen at the end of the day. So what I actually did in that second instantiation, right up until the point containers were available, was make Docker a glorified process launcher, so it would launch Notepad or something like that.
Right, so you say, an end target.
You say Docker run from some image, Notepad. Right. And all it would do is launch Notepad actually on the computer itself, as opposed to launching a container running Notepad, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
So that was the second iteration that we did. So that was detached very largely from the open source world itself. So we took a clone of the open source code, and we worked on it ourselves, and we weren't, to some extent we were, but we weren't largely thinking about how we would put this code necessarily back into the open source. And we knew a lot of what we were working on then and had changed. Mm. Just wouldn't be suitable to go back. So after the Build conference, we effectively started again. So in the interim, I think Docker had moved from 1.4. I think they were on 1.7, maybe even 1.8 at the time. No, I think it was 1.7 at the time. So there's actually quite a big divergence between the code base that I'd been working on and the code that there was now in the current code.
The goalposts had moved.
The goalposts had moved quite dramatically. So a lot of the code that I changed, even though it wasn't suitable, I was like thinking, well, how could I put this into that? And it just wasn't even a place for it in the new code base. And certain constructs has gone, like the engine had gone. There was a construct called the engine inside the Docker internals. That was removed from it. So there was a lot of, like, look at what I've changed. Look at the way in which, why I changed it, but then I had to rewrite it entirely.
Right. That sounds like a lot of work. So in summary then, how much code did you have to write? How much did you have to change?
How much did I have
to change?
Give us
a scale of the project of what you've been working on.
That is a great question, but I honestly can't give you like a number in terms of lines of code. Are we
talking hundreds of lines, thousands of lines, tens of thousands of lines?
It's certainly in the thousands of lines of code, that I've either added or modified,
And has it even just been you, or have you been collaborating with other people within Microsoft and Docker?
So there's a few people internally at Microsoft that have worked on it. I've been the predominant person working on the Docker engine itself. We have got another guy who's worked on the storage side of it, or the graph driver in terms of Docker. I work largely on the networking, the execution, and the Docker port itself of the daemon. And there's been a few other people that helped out in bits and pieces, but certainly I've been the predominant person.
So has it been here? Obviously, people associate Microsoft building Microsoft technology and open source somewhere over there. But more and more, we're seeing changes around that. Linux is a great workload on Hyper-V. We're doing a lot of interaction at management level in Azure and so on. How has it been for you working for Microsoft, but working very much focused on that open source side of things?
That's a really interesting question. So, I mean, certainly, bear in mind, I was a program manager before January or so when I started working on this stuff. So everything in terms of development at Microsoft for me was new. But everything that I was also working on as a developer at Microsoft was pretty much new to Microsoft as well.
Right.
So there had been some work previously from another group, the Azure group, who had done the port of the Docker client to Windows. But they weren't involved in the daemon port as such. So it was a brand new learning curve for the Hyper-V team, for the Windows organization where I work, to learn how to work with the open source, learn the tool set. I mean, Git we don't use internally at Microsoft, certainly not in the Windows organization. Things like IRC for chatting to people and getting to know people in the community, and the whole process of going through GitHub and submitting PRs and making sure that the code that you write is acceptable to open source and what the review process looks like. There was a huge learning curve to get to that point.
It sounds like it, there's just a lot of moving parts involved. It's not as simple as, I can just do it because it's open source.
No, I mean, there are rules to follow. There's a governance model for Docker, and you have to adopt to that, and you have to be careful in terms of what you've put in there, and any changes I make them may be Windows specific. I've got to really think about how that affects other platforms as well. And it is also made a little bit harder by the fact that as a code I was pushing back into Docker itself, there was no process inside Docker that would stop other people submitting Linux changes or other platform changes, because there's a free BSD port going on as well, that would break the changes that I'd done in Windows, because you know, then I'd suddenly find that the Windows daemon wouldn't compile anymore. And I'd have to go and fix that. So up until the point at which we actually got continuous integration, CI running on Docker itself, so as people submit changes to make sure that they don't at least break the Windows daemon building, not even saying that it would run, just the fact that it would just build on a daily basis. That was a huge milestone just to get to that point.
So would you say that's been your biggest challenge working on the whole project, or is there something that's been even keeping you up at night even more than that?
Oh, there are so many challenges that have been involved in it. I can't think of any single one that stands out. I mean, it has been challenge after challenge to get to that point. I mean, there was huge time pressures as well. I mean, hitting build initially and then hitting a technical preview 3. Right up in TP3 launch. I actually took a week off just before TP3 launch.
It's very selfish of you, John.
It was. What can I say? So it's like everything was pushed. There was a pull request up at Docker, but they were critical that they had to get in or else the daemon wouldn't work against the TP3 build. So there was a lot of pressure getting everything lined up so it worked at the release date.
Nice. So there was a blog post published just recently on the it was actually on the one of the Docker blogs talked about the contributions you've made among you with your team as well, and the impact that's going to have. But on that blog post, there was something a little bit intriguing. This Nyan Cat. And
yes,
I apologize if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. We deliberated back and forth a little bit before filming. Is it Nyan Cat, Nyan Cat, Nyan Cat? Who knows? Let us know if we're wrong. But what is it? What is this cat?
Yeah, I got introduced to this through IRC. I think it was Brian and Jess that introduced me to it. I'd never heard of it before. So this is actually something that I wasn't really directly involved in. So if we wind back a little bit, so I mentioned that previously the Docker client was ported to Windows as well, so it could point against a Linux daemon. So one of the problems with the Windows console is that we don't have good ANSI emulation inside the Windows console. And so there was an emulator that was written inside the Docker client that runs on Windows that emulated ANSI. A number of people have done a lot of work in it. I claim to have fixed like 2 or 3 bugs, that's about it, but fairly small bugs. But one of my colleagues, John, has done extensive work on porting or making that a lot better, certainly, and that's now actually in a separate open source repository up on the Azure. I think it's Azure/go-ANSI term.
Right.
I think it's where it's actually located on the internet.
Nice.
So Nyan Cat is pretty stressful in terms of ANSI emulation. So it's basically a cat running across a screen, something like that.
So productive, yeah.
It's very productive, I guess. Yeah. But so yeah, there was a lot of work. That was like one of the ultimate tests to say if the ANSI emulation gets through that, then it's probably good enough at that point.
Nice. And I've noticed on GitHub, where you mentioned before with a lot of contributions going on, you've got a thing about golden retrievers.
Well, golden retrievers and dogs in general. So,
because I'm a dog person as well, I have 2 dogs.
So yeah, I have a golden retriever, Shadow. He's my pet. He's nearly 8 years old now. But one of the things I've been doing for the last 3 years, and most people in the building would have seen me, I don't actually have one today, but I'm a guide dog for the blind puppy raiser as well.
Oh, wow.
So I take these puppies and put them through their training, so socialization basically, until they're ready for formal recall back to guide dogs for the start of their formal training.
Wow.
So, so usually one of my avatars for anywhere an online presence is inevitably a dog. So, yeah,
that's why. Learning all sorts of stuff about John today. So to wrap up, if people want to get involved, because it is about contributing, you know, you can get involved, John's involved, there's lots of people who are out there who can get involved if you want to start contributing. How would people get started? What's the best way?
So certainly I would suggest that you hang out on IRC. There is a channel on irc.freenode.net called #docker-dev.
And we'll put all of this in the comments as well, so you can see on the video.
That's a really good place to hang out if you have questions to ask. You can go to GitHub. You can clone the source from github.com/docker/docker. Read through the source. Anybody can contribute. There is a contribution guidelines document in there, and like the process you should follow in order to how you submit PRs, how you should name them, types of changes that you should consider, some things that you shouldn't consider. Mm-hmm. But if in doubt, always ask on IRC. They're a very friendly bunch that I've got to know on IRC. They're the other maintainers.
Nice. There. So how many people are on there currently, roughly?
On IRC, there's probably quite a lot of lurkers on there. I mean, actively.
In the nicest sense.
Yeah, I mean, on the Docker Dev and Docker Maintainers channel, so I'd say probably collectively there's about 30 or 40 active people on there.
Should be, if you've got questions, you should be able to get an answer relatively quickly.
Yes, you can.
Okay, great. And we will post some more resources as well around how you download the technical preview 3 bits so you can start experimenting with containers if you haven't. We'll give you some links to our documentation on MSDN so you can spin up a new environment, start creating your containers either with PowerShell or with Docker. Mm-hmm. So really sample John's work firsthand by playing with it yourself. And with that, I guess there's not much else more to say. Check out the resources. Thanks to John for joining us today and learn a bit more about just what's going on behind the scenes to bring this kind of technology to you and also how you can get involved as well. So thanks to John. Thanks to you for watching. And we'll see you in another episode of the Containers Channel. Thanks.